Court, how did last week's Mouthpiece Poets event at the Drill Hall go?
It was phenomenal, Alex. You were absolutely phenomenal.
You, of course, the ace MC that I would have been there, but I was out to dinner with the externals, which sounds quite serious, and it was, actually.
It sounds like an awesome action film.
It was, actually, out to dinner,
out
with,
to
the
dinner with the externals.
Well, I will work on that basis. Yeah. Still, life continues.
No, it was phenomenally good. So good that we had to get about four stacks of the stackable chairs out of the back room of the Drill Hall because we'd filled the cafe space.
You see the fantastic magic that Gemma Baker and, of course, your good self and other, and indeed Andy Kerr, who is so keen to actually be on the Midweek Drive, he turned up at 7 a.m. this morning. Wrong day, Andy. Wrong day. It's tomorrow morning.
Is that why he texted me this morning to remind me about Siren?
He did. He's from Northern Ireland. It happens. So Andy will be with us, of course, tomorrow morning with some examples of performance poetry. You've got some later on today. Katie, you were, of course, in the choir earlier today.
I was, yes.
You were in the choir because Ed Wellman was there, and he was before he went off to Birmingham.
Yes, directing us.
And the wonderful writer extraordinaire that is William Coles, based in Edinburgh, of course, actually, quote directly from his last email to me, sent a matter of hours ago, "I'm looking forward to speaking to your posse." Well, we've got David J. Howe and Sam Stone with us, as well as Katie and, of course...
You've changed.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And, of course, Steve Court. And explaining, this is William speaking, my crazy theories about choirs. Well, you know, when you go in with crazy theories about choirs, William, you've just launched one, haven't you?
I hope so. I hope so.
Go on, share with us. Don't keep us hanging like some kind of, you know, enraptured team of William Colettes who are desperately trying to find out what's he doing with this choir?
The idea was that a lot of people, particularly people in their sort of 40s, they try and stretch themselves by doing big physical events. They do marathons. And then when they've done one marathon, they think, OK, I'm going to do another one, and I'll see if I can shave 3 minutes off my time. And then they do another marathon, and then they do another marathon. And then they think, OK, I'm going to do something different. And they do, whatever, a triathlon or a really long swim. But it's all the same physical sort of stuff. And in my book, it's not really a stretch. The first marathon that you do is a stretch, but just doing, continuing to do marathons or long swims or physical stuff is not that much of a stretch. And the idea was to stretch yourself mentally and to do something that made you feel very uncomfortable. And certainly for a lot of guys, that is singing. And so 6 months ago, I got a mate, Baron Eric von Ibler, who's a singing pro, to start training us up. And we formed this choir, about a dozen of us, called the Baronets. And we had our one and only performance last week. There you go. That is the theory.
So we're looking at a series of photographs on Facebook. Katie, would you actually describe what we're seeing here?
They are incredibly dapper. There are, 12?
Incredibly dapper.
12 incredibly dapper gentlemen.
Not a dirty dozen, then.
No, incredibly dapper dozen. Yes, who look like they've either just been singing or are just about to sing, with some very well-organised choir books as well, which is, yes, I'm quite envious of that.
Yeah, exactly. They're just before we're about to sing.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, because obviously you don't look as though... I mean, there's a shot there with, I believe, Anthony Alderson and your good self, Bill Coles, and it looks, Bill, as though you're certainly perusing the collection there. I mean, David, have you ever considered breaking into song every so often in the Stone Tapes?
No.
So the Stone Tapes, the musical.
Oddly enough, no. Hmm. No, I don't think I can sing, but Sam might have a different view on that, but...
No, she's not demurring at all in that.
No, she's not at all. No, she's agreeing with me completely. No,
He can sing. He can sing.
No, I can't sing.
He can sing lots of notes, but not necessarily
in the right order. Yeah, thank you.
Steve, there's not too much of a jump between performance poetry and performance singing.
Oh, there is.
Is there?
Oh, it's huge. It's the reason I do performance poetry.
All right.
I always wanted to be in a band, but I couldn't play an instrument, so I started trying to sing, and then the band politely informed me that I also couldn't do that. So I found my next best way of getting on stage was to go and do performance poetry.
As William's online at present, and he's always fascinated to actually get a little snapshot of creativity, have you got a short piece of performance poetry you can deliver for us now, perhaps? Sort of offset?
You can maybe fill with like a...
Well, of course we can fill. We can actually say so far on the show we've gone from Nashville to Jersey to finding out that Jersey has not had any foreign cows in there since 1763. if that isn't enough to set up a gun law, I don't know what is. But that's what we were talking about with Andre and Arthur Weingarten. And how are we getting with respect to that wonderful selection that was last heard live in this studio from a place not too far away from where you're sitting now, back in 2040, was it? No, it's
2040.
I came back from the future.
Yeah. I was thinking about the Myathon, which was, of course, 2012.
That was a good day.
Anyway, Bill's got a busy person. He's got things to do.
I did realise I'm slightly limited because I brought a book that is very definitely for a post-Watershed audience.
So I won't read that one.
I thought maybe I can edit it, and then I just looked through it and went, they're nearly all the rhyming words. It sort of destroys it a little bit. But I have got one that's called I Can't Say I Love You With All My Heart.
I Can't Say I Love You With All My Heart, now delivered for the edification and delight of the Siren FM listener, courtesy of Steve Court.
I can't say I love you with all my heart, but I can say roses are red and violets are of a bluish kind of hue. And I love you as much as one mammal can do when a mammal loves another mammal attempting gender code breaking. To unlock the secrets of hormone-induced acts of lovemaking, it's just I can't say I love you with all my heart, because that's not enough. I love you with all my parts. You twist my stomach into pretzels like Boy Scout nuts. I love the way you snort when you giggle and insist I drink shots, the way you curl your lip when you're happy and sad and confused. I don't know, you curl it a lot. It leaves me kind of bemused, but I love it. And I wouldn't tell you this, but I even love it when you complain. Obviously, I have to play my part and tell you you drive me insane, but if it wasn't for the fact that you still care, I guess I'd be the same. And though it might make things more defined and remove some of the stress, I love it when you take the time to express to me, to caress, to express, even to undress me, or even just to dress me down. It's what keeps us together and my feet on the ground, because success is like a helium balloon. Can drag you up to a better view, but like a single line hit, it's so often a trip for just me and not you. And while I can get swept away by the glamour of my touring helium-filled rocket ships, the truth is it's less blue M&Ms in brandy glasses and more soggy service station chips. And I still find it absurd that they would pay to hear the ink I spilt read as spoken word, but you're on hand to remind me of the Hindenburg, that sometimes the feeling of grass under your feet is a more satisfyingly real way to be complete than days spent with your head in the clouds, searching for stars in the day, wearing a heavy heart of night-coloured shrouds, because it's easy to take solace in the solitude of a tortured artist, to hide behind the pages of a text claiming it's not just a spurious catharsis. I have to write it what makes me, like somehow I grow from every page I cut from a pulp tree. But would my rose not smell as sweet if I never wrote it down? I've waded these dangerous waters so long in search of a crown that the water laps at the side, over the side of the boat and goes to drag it down, and I'd go down with it to drown, except I wear you like a life vest. Your warm flesh wrapped and pressed against the beating heart inside my chest. And though I find a life of mediocrity hard to digest, I look at your curled lip and can't resist. So I can't say I love you with all my heart, because that's not enough. I love you with my every part.
A round of applause.
Yay! Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
It's gone down a storm in Lincoln, but what does that mean north of the border when you're actually in Edinburgh? I mean, who knows what are the jury results from Edinburgh, Monsieur Coles?
It's wonderful. It's got a slight feel of I could do anything for love, but I won't do that. What do we think? You know, you're expecting him to come up with the killer line, and in fact, he's saying he's even more in love. Yeah, it's wonderful. Though I was dubious about the line about loving this person even when they're complaining, and I think that's sounding like first flush. Do we really like whingers?
Do we really like whingers, Steve?
She's listening, so yes, I love her.
Right. How long has this relationship been going on?
We had a question about for the duration of the relationship from Bill there.
We will have been married for 12 years in July.
Oh my God. Well, congratulations. It's incredible that you love the sound of your partner's whinging.
It just shows the magical romance that is Steve Court. In fact, actually, that means actually you probably, yeah, when you first started doing these shows, Steve, you would have only had about 4 years, because it's been a wee while now.
It would have been.
We've missed you, Steve, obviously. Otherwise, we wouldn't have invited you back. And the fact that you only came here to sort of step in for Andy Kerr is irrelevant. You know, you're here, that's the important thing.
Well, that was new information for me, so that's that's disappointing.
You will be back, that's important. Katie, any questions for William about his choral singing and thoughts and theories? I mean, does it resonate with yourself? Because obviously the Lincoln University Choir is not all male.
No, it's not, but we are always grateful for any chaps that want to sing with us, because there are certainly more women singing in the choir than men, and I think it's true that men are... I think men are discouraged from singing more than women are.
Unless you're Welsh.
Unless you're Welsh, true.
Is that true, Bill? Okay, so unless you're Welsh, and clearly...
I think that's right, yeah. A lot of men are very frit of singing. You've got these roughy toughies who do all these things and run up mountains and all the rest, but when it comes to performing in public and singing, woo, it's risky, and they do not like it, and that's the reason for doing it. And also, obviously, down in Lincoln, it's a great pickup joint, too.
Yeah, okay then. Just in case you're wondering, Romania's still leading Switzerland 1-0 in the European Championships. We are Euro 2016. In case you're wondering, it was Stanciu who actually scored in the 18th minute with a penalty. So there we are. Always nice to actually keep abreast of the situation. It's 3 minutes past six, and it's back to Katie for the last two questions for William Coles.
Have you had an enjoyable telephonic link with us this evening?
I have had a wonderful telephonic link. Thank you so much for having me.
And will you be joining us again soon?
Yeah, any time you ask, I'd love to.
Brilliant. Up next, Staking Vampires, Transylvanian Grand Guignol and more on The Midweek Drive, courtesy of Siren FM. This is new music, Straight Lines.
You're running in circles, you're travelling in straight lines.
I'm looking at his Facebook page and I'm seeing Richard Hand and Jim Bob Hand at Glamorgan versus Hants on a lovely summer evening. Is this right, Professor Richard Hand from the University of South Wales?
That's correct. Yes, on a 2020 match a couple of weeks ago. It was lovely.
And nice to see we've got the wood theme there, which takes us all the way through to your Transylvanian jaunts. When, as I rightly said, surely if you've actually come back from Transylvania with an item like this, which is Vladimir the Impaler, yeah, exactly, it's a very good. Surely what you should actually do then is have it washed ashore at Whitby.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that would be the right thing to do, wouldn't it?
So what possessed you? Was it just a case of saying, look, I need a nice romantic gift to actually take home to the family. This will work perfectly.
Well, you know me, Alex, all these years of the Gothic and the Grand Guignol, you know?
I did think that it was there in full force, so excellent stuff. And we're sharing books, of course. Let's just remind people that Sam Stone in the studio at this very moment. Sam, you've got not one, two fantastic new books out. Would you like to promote them, please?
Oh, am I going to do a bit of a plug now? Yes. Book six of my Vampire Gene series. It's called The Age of Jewel, and that's out at the moment. And book two of my Jinx Chronicle series, which is called Jinx Magic. And it continues the story of the Jinx, who are an alien species.
Quite frankly, Richard, Sam Stone is often a kind of a writing whirling dervish. He churns the material out. It's amazing, you know. Aliens, so the alien species, Jinx and so on, and then vampires and so on. But that vampire system, and so what? Have you always been fond of the vampire genre?
Absolutely. I mean, my very first novel was called Killing Kiss, which I wrote for my master's degree dissertation in creative writing, actually. And to be honest, I've always been fascinated with 19th century Gothic literature, Bram Stoker, of course, and generally Hammer horror movies since the age of 12. So it was only right that I would start writing about vampires as my first thing.
Clearly. Richard, from an academic perspective, I mean, people still talk with hushed tones about the time you delivered at the opening address for Telefantasy and Society 1. Yes, there will be a 2 coming in the not too distant future.
Right.
Yes. But from your own, I mean, I know back in the day when we actually had the University of Lincoln in Humberside, I know, go figure. It sounds strange, but it happened. Richard and I remember it, and we will continue to use oral history to prove that it was there. We were actually in Hull at one stage in our careers. But was it a similar thing for yourself, the Grand Guignol, the Gothic, that kind of notion of the surprise, the shock, the theatre of horror?
Yeah, I think for me as well, it goes way back. It's quite interesting, isn't it? It's quite intriguing. First nightmare I ever had was the age of 4 years old. It was Bela Lugosi suddenly appearing. I don't think I'd even seen the films then. It was, you know, a picture in one of those wonderful, you know, horror books, you know.
You were probably too young.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. There's something very deep-seated and, you know, and for me, it's been a fascination ever since. Hence all the work on the Grand Guignol, you know, when I discovered about this wonderful French theatre of horror, you know, even though it's long gone, I mean, you know, fascinating.
Well, I don't know, Euro 2016 has got lots of horrific tales in it, as we know.
That's right.
But, that, I mean, that actually, it's a worthwhile thing, because, I mean, David, are you familiar with the whole Grand Guignol theatre and the Montmartre in Paris and how
absolutely.
It sort of really opened up?
Absolutely. I'm absolutely fascinated by that. I mean, I love all of that kind of... spectacle theatre, if you want to call it that. I mean, in a way, Grand Guignol is the forerunner of a lot of like today's magic shows, and obviously very different kind of approach. But they were cutting off people's heads live on stage, and you know, disemboweling people. Of course, they weren't really, but it was the very very clever way that it was the whole thing was pulled together. And of course, that I think led into the films. And I wouldn't be at all surprised, and probably you know, Richard yourself. Some of the people that worked on that probably worked on the early films in terms of doing the effects and so on.
Well, that's right. Yeah, there was a big crossover with some of the actors and directors as well. Yeah, no, that was important. And I totally agree. I mean, the sense of the spectacle and that wonderful moment of popular entertainment, because, you know, accounts of the original Grand Guignol was that people would roar with laughter, you know, as much as faint, all these famous stories about people fainting, but actually it was a damn good night out, and it still is, I think, you know, reading wonderful reviews of The Conjuring 2, I haven't seen it yet, but, you know, you get the spirit of the Grand Guignol at those moments where it sounds like a real treat.
A bit like watching schlock horror for us now, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a lot of fun, isn't it? You know, it is an adrenaline ride. You know, it's a roller coaster, but that's quite fun sometimes.
Have you been out to Transylvania then, Richard?
Yes, I was there a couple of weeks ago for the. It was the first international vampire art and film festival in Sighișoara, which is the birthplace of Vlad the Impaler. And so it was a wonderful event, and we were we adapted Dracula to perform there. So that was amidst, you know, a whole range of film festival, and there was music and a whole range of sort of activities, all with a vampire theme.
The Dracula Audio Project. I see we want to give some name checks here to Morgan Thomas and the Pontypridd Lido Project and so on. Share with us, because when that line came to actually say let's do Dracula in Transylvania, you could almost say this is a bit surreal, really. It's like Coles to Newcastle.
Yes, yeah, that's it. And yet it's a very interesting place. I mean, it's very significant that it's the first international vampire festival there. And actually, a colleague of mine is from that region. And when this sort of first came up as a project, I mean, she was saying, oh, it's a little sensitive for the people there. I think in some ways they feel it's a bit of an imposition, you know, where they feel they're very nice people, and they are. It's a wonderful place, and they feel that in some ways they've been burdened with this kind of legend. At the same time, you know, if it's like for Whitby, it's done no harm for Whitby, and you might as well embrace this if you want the tourists and actually some wonderful festivals going on.
Embrace the inner goth.
Yes.
Steve.
It's just reminding me of a very funny thing I had probably about 8 years ago, 8-9 years ago, when I was in a play just outside Manchester, in a place that I will just call The Woods, because I can't remember what it was called. We set a plane. It was a touring, but you arrived in the car park and you were taking on a bit of a tour by characters through the woods, and the play sort of played out in all these various different locations. And it culminated with you standing on the bank of this very small river, and on the far side of the bank was a coffin that creaked open and out came a vampire. Except we hadn't really sealed the woods off properly. So at the moment when the coffin creaked open and the lights came up on him and this vampire emerged from the coffin, so did a guy walking his dog from partway up the bank and just looked at this guy coming out of the coffin, absolutely petrified, turned and ran, and we've never seen either of them again. So I don't know who the man with the dog was, but it was one of my favourite moments ever. There was a good 5-minute pause in the play while everyone just fell about laughing. The audience, the cast, and the crew. And then we just picked it up and carried on. It was fantastic.
Brilliant. Richard, last year, I think it was, Sam and I met a really nice guy at the horror convention in this country, Dacre Stoker. Now, I don't know if you've met Dacre.
Yes, yeah, he was at the festival. Yeah, really, he gave a wonderful talk about his links to Bram Stoker, and it was wonderful. And I didn't see, unfortunately, one thing I kicked myself. Some of my performers were out for a late night walk and bumped into Dacre Stoker around Castle Dracula area, and they improvised a little scene. He was very, very sporting and a lot of fun.
That's lovely. He's a really nice guy, very, very dedicated to, the cause of, as you say, the whole Grand Guignol and Transylvania. But I think he's also very interested in the preservation of it all as well.
Yeah.
And, making sure it's treated with respect, which is also important.
Absolutely, yeah.
Katie, vampires. I mean, you have a couple of pet rats, so that's a step towards Gothic scenario, isn't it, really?
I don't know. I suppose it is a bit, really. How have you sort of seen the resurgence of sort of vampires in popular culture, and how do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's fascinating. One thing I found very interesting at the festival was the sense of how far back these legends go. And I think, Bram Stoker did a wonderful thing with Dracula, and it was that sort of, this almost a step into modernism in some ways. It was an extraordinary moment. But, of course, he's drawing on an ancient folklore and history. And I met some wonderful people at the festival who were doing, research into these different legends about how you were turned into a vampire. And, really, really fascinating. And stuff that is not in the kind of more contemporary legends, but would have a wonderful place in that. There was one I really liked where if someone's died, don't let an animal jump over the body because they'll immediately spring up as a vampire. Legends like this, which I think would be wonderful in a comic film, if nothing else. It still has a powerful place, and I think there's still something, it has a resonance to it. We could talk about the sense of the other and the kind of, the kind of subconscious and the sort of hidden desires and all these things which the vampire in some ways embodies. It's they're very much alive and well, aren't they?
Or undead and unwell, but still one of those two things.
Yes.
I'm sure it sort of fit well with the whole scenario. If you're a vampire listening, of course, to the Midweek Drive, stay out of the sun. All right, that's what we're saying. Stay out of the sun.
No trouble doing that in Lincolnshire.
No, exactly. It's a definite way
freely right now.
We've talked about books. Richard, you've had a recent another publication. Would you like to just give another shameless plug to the latest fantastic offering from Professor Richard Hand? It is...
Yeah, I recently published a third book on Grand Guignol theatre called Playing the Grand Guignol, Performing Horror Theatre. So, I'm really pleased with that. And that's got some hopefully really fascinating translations, first translations of classic Grand Guignol plays.
This is one of the reasons why the University of East Anglia's gain will be the loss of another university, but we can't say anything else at this particular stage. It's a wondrous thing. I feel though I did try to pave the way, a bit like Renfield, perhaps, when I delivered a paper at the University of East Anglia about 2 or 3 years ago. I felt, the master is coming, I was Steve, any final closing questions you'd like to put to Richard at this stage?
Well, the book's just come out, so usually what that means for someone who writes books is... what's next?
Nice.
Right, yeah. Well, interestingly, we've already been asked, because I wrote it with
my co-researcher Mike Wilson, and we've already been asked to write a fourth Grand Guignol book, which we've begun work on, and that's looking at the contemporary horror scene. So it's quite interesting. So the first three books are very much historical or practical aspects in relation to the old theatre, but now this new project is looking at the contemporary scene. So next month I'm out in Washington with Molotov Theatre Company, which is a wonderful horror theatre company, you know, in the depths of DC, getting ready for Trump's arrival.
Blood, Sweat and Fears, a Grand Guignol sick cabaret there, courtesy of Molotov. Presumably you provide your own cocktails, just a thought there. Yes. Bit of a bottle, bit of a petrol, you know. It's a way forward, honestly. We're not endorsing that if anybody from the CIA is actually listening. And extraordinary. Blood, Sweat and Fears. Yes. See what they did there.
Obviously. Very good. Very clever.
Well, actually, anybody who wasn't around in the 60s or knows any reference to the band Blood, Sweat and Tears will actually have no idea what I was talking about. Never mind. Katie, go for it. Last two questions for Professor Richard Hand. Please.
Have you had an enjoyable telephonic link with us today?
Yeah, it's been lovely, yes.
Will you be joining us again soon?
Of course.
A round of applause for Professor Richard Hand. Yay! Who would have actually taken us from watching cricket in Glamorgan to Grand Guignol horror? It's a strange world.
Hey, this is Larry Nemechek, Dr. Trek, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive.
And he's here proving that utopia can actually exist. Yes, Larry Nemechek, welcome back to the Midweek Drive after. I mean, we had to go backwards in time. Time warp, going backwards in time to live those last 3 days all over again, but delighted to have you back. Larry, welcome back.
Oh, not again.
I have to say that. Ah, yes. I'll take you home, Kathleen, until the... sorry, I was going to... Bruce Hyde's rendition. Yeah, exactly. You've tried. The Naked Time, in case you're wondering. That's the episode.
I was just thinking, William Coles will be proud.
Well, I thought we'd save it into that. Yeah, it is worth it. In the latest edition of Star Trek, the magazine, of course, there has to be the greatest response that you've given, Larry, to one of the most extraordinary letters that I've ever had. And it's always nice to give that added bonus. Titan Publications will be pleased to know that sometimes the contributors, if they're letter writers, can even have their words immortalised in an audio form. And this is from a Canadian called Nora Camps. I presume that's her real name. But let's say it's Nora Camps from Canada. Larry, I think you know the one we're referring to. It's The Power of Laughter. The question is, and I'll put this to the team before you actually answer it, if you can identify this episode, please help me figure out which Star Trek episode this is from. The good guys were trying to figure out how to win over the bad guys. The bad guys had massive and growing power. The good guys figured out that their own negative energy, their hate and willingness to destroy the bad guys, was the thing that was giving the bad guys power. They then purposely thought about love, tenderness, kindness, gratitude, empathy, and hey presto, the bad guys lost their power. I want to tell my kids the story and need to show them the episode first. Have you got any idea whatsoever?
Well, it sounds like most Star Trek episodes to
me.
if I was going to be pinned down, and I'm not good at titles, I'm afraid, Larry, so you might have to help me out here. Is it the one where the Enterprise gets caught by a great big hand and they end up down on the planet?
No, that's who mourns for Adonis.
No. The one where it's all spooky on the planet and they...
No, that's Cat's Paw.
Cat's Paw, that's the one.
Yes, no, it's not Cat's Paw. It's not Cat's Paw either.
No, they're in a haunted house in that one.
I mean, they are.
It's all artificial.
Two teeny little alien things.
Because they're drawing off their power. Shut up.
It's the one that they're all captured and they're pitted against each other, but I just don't know what it was called. And it was like
only all kinds of alien, weirdy...
Only
a fool fights in a burning house.
Absolutely. Mm.
I myself have felt some tendency to racism, most distressing. I'm paraphrasing, of course, the man there. But yes, you're absolutely right, Sam. I think you're... Katie's looking... Steve?
The whole conversation is somewhere about 4 foot above my head.
Oh. It is, of course, Larry, reveal the title.
Well, you know, it was a guess to me because she wasn't exactly right, but it did sound as if someone was really trying to search through the fog and remember. But what I guessed she meant was Day of the Dove, where it wasn't just a back and forth, but there was a Klingon boarding party taken aboard that were prisoners, but there was a third party, the rotating floaty ball of light, which fed off hatred and set up situations where it had plenty of hate to feed on, and basically set up a perpetual war where no one ever died. They would just fight each other in the confines of the ship evenly, and people would come back to life after they'd been killed. It would bring them back alive just so they could keep fighting and fighting and fighting for eternity, and it would live. And the Enterprise people, and then even convinced the Klingons that the only way they would escape this and have their own, you know, have their own destiny back, was if they could all, you know, laugh it off and get along and starve a rotating
and people might have been wondering why, when we were in the bleakness and darkness of Arthur Weingarten sharing the despair over the situation in America, what was happening. It's quite simple, Arthur, and for all Americans there, look for the little whirly ball of light behind Donald Trump and give some good spirits out there.
You know, I wrote a piece on Sunday after Orlando, and I basically, because I started seeing people online, I saw fans online saying, okay, I'm just going to crawl into my cave and watch some Star Trek and try to feel better about humanity. And I, after seeing about the 47th one of those, I thought, you know what? Okay, if you're going to do that, don't just go in and, you know, don't just veg out on Star Trek. How about watch some shows first? To kind of lead you in some structured hopefulness for the future, and I said, why not watch Past Tense with the Bell Riots? You know, I said, how about watch Distant Origin? How about watch In the Hands of the Prophet on DS9? But basically, it was like some of the issues that were tackled in social issues or the tensions between, you know, orthodoxy and you know, fundamentalism versus whatever, and so the ills caused by the frictions of social injustice, and The Outcast was another one on Next Generation, which was gender issues. Anyway, so watch 3 or 4 of these, and then go watch The Tribbles, you know, if you really want to feel warm and fuzzy again. But do something constructive with it and put yourself in a mindset of, you know, even in Star Trek, they had their imperfect history or their imperfect situations, and before you just totally go out and veg out on the perfection of the 23rd. quote-unquote, of the 23rd and 24th century. So, but at the end, I said, if only we could look behind all this and find the rotating ball of light to just laugh it off, and that would solve everything. Well, so, you're not the only one to think of that, to go that direction.
The connection is there. And, of course, the other connection that we need to make quite explicit for your good self, Larry, is that Sam Stone is a very, very good friend with, indeed, the actress who portrayed Lita, the Darbo girl, in Deep Space Nine. Of course, we're referring to...
Chase Masterson.
In fact, you've even referred to...
Yeah,
Chase is
the honey.
...to all sorts of other areas, etc. And Chase is doing her bit for positive things.
She is, indeed.
Katie, I know you're a Doctor Who aficionado, and I know that when Ryan and yourself actually host the show that follows the Midweek Drive, we're at the letter C today.
We are indeed.
Letter C. So Cat's Paw could actually work in on that sort of side of things if you had a Star Trek reference. But what are your thoughts on what Larry's been saying? Is it important to sort of keep this sort of positivity going?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that one of the wonderful things about science fiction is it sort of shows us how the world can be. And surely we should use that as motivation to fight for a world that we want and for a world that's far more accepting and a world that's far more kind of positive and views humanity's diversity really positively rather than wanting to wrap up in it and hide from the real world with it. I think science fiction should enrich the real world rather than be an escape from it.
Which in many ways is the kind
Absolutely.
Of utopian vision that was put forward within that. And I'm citing, of course, from the latest edition of Star Trek the magazine, which indeed you don't have in front of you there because I'm using the online version. No, that's the last one, actually. That's the George Takei edition. The latest one begins to pave the way to the movie and so on. One minor sort of routine, I should really take this up with Titan Books. The translation of utopia, it actually comes from the Greek utopos, not the Latin utopos. Ah. I don't want to criticise that whole notion, but I just thought, oh, dear. Slight classical flaw there in the writer. It wasn't Larry, it has to be said. It wasn't Larry. Larry would not have made such a basic fundamental error as getting the wrong classical language for defining utopia. Sorry, Larry, I'm just venting a little bit there. It's been that kind of show. Steve, any questions for Larry Nemechek, Dr. Trek?
Yes, I wanted to know what his opinions are of the new remakes, because obviously I know he's a classic fan, but what's his take on the new spin of them?
Are you talking about the movies? The
movies,
Bad Robot JJ movie?
Because the new TV series is coming.
You know, at first... Yeah, because the new series is coming. I'm really, really excited about the series. They haven't announced formally, but the signs are pointing that it will be back in the prime canon, which to me, just emotionally, that's where people are invested. And I've seen some arguments about, well, a new audience doesn't want to feel overwhelmed by having to know 700 hours. But I think he's perfect to lead this. He's done other series. He has street cred with Hannibal and with Pushing Daisies, and he's shown he can do something besides Star Trek. But he was an old Star Trek fan, and he began on Voyager, and he'd sold on DS9, and I knew him from then. And he's a savvy guy, too, and he's dealt with, you know, everything from networks to social media crazies to the online world. And I think he's a really smart guy, and I think he can... I think he can lift all boats. I think he can satisfy the old fans' demands and also present anything so that a new audience... I mean, he's smart. He's not going to sabotage himself. He's going to present something to get to the broadest audience possible commercially. But then again, it's on streaming, so they're not going to be watching ratings, you know, which is a great thing about not being on the network and being on a premium channel or a streaming service, is you're not watching ratings from day one, week to week. You've got an overall effect. So I'm very excited about the series, and the movies have taken me a while to warm up to, although I want all Star Trek to do well. It wasn't my choice at the beginning, but the way they went with the alternate universe was born out of where the thinking of some of the suits was in 2006, was that Star Trek was tired, which I disagreed with, but that it was tired and needed to go back to its roots, quote-unquote, only differently. So in some ways, I thought that was kind of a retread, but then I went, okay, well, it's happening. And I wanted to support it. And it took me a while to, you know, get over it. Although I've always said that the strongest things were the casting was great. It was great they had so much money to spend. And the best thing of all is they brought in so many new fans. Having said that and having my ups and downs with the first two movies, I was at the event on May 20th, which I think we talked about here. I was blown away. The 500 people or so there were blown away. In your gut, it felt like Star Trek. I think Justin Lin is an old fanboy himself before he was ever a Fast and Furious fixer. And I think he and Simon Pegg's script have done well. So even though it's still the alternate universe, it just in your gut feels like Star Trek. So I'm excited about the movie and what it can do, way more than I was expecting 6-9 months ago, although I always suspected. And I'm very excited about the series. So I'm thrilled. I was worried that all the partying would happen for the 50th this year and we'd have a hangover next year. But I'm not worried about that anymore. I think we're just
Larry,
go
have you seen Star Trek Continues?
Sorry.
Yeah, I was in the first
Should I say that again? Larry, have you seen Star Trek Continues?
I have. And that guy they had playing McCoy first was amazing.
Genius. Genius. It'll come
no,
back.
No, yeah.
We know, Larry, you were born to, I mean, forget Carl Urban, he's only keeping the seat warm for you before you actually sort of emerge as, you know, the third actor to portray Leonard McCoy. Leonard McCoy. Very important for that. strange enough, we don't actually have time to deal with Linda Owens' question from Rockdale, Texas about transporters. If you want to have the answer to that, get by the magazine. That's what I'll say. Just buy the magazine. It's fascinating. And that is a shameless plug there, but, you know, it can only tease to a certain amount. And Linda knows what she asked, and Larry knows what he answered. And it's well put together. It's all to do with transporter challenges and so on. Larry, I'm going to invite you now, bearing in mind that we're heading very shortly back again to another part of Los Angeles to speak to ace actress Lily Holloman, who was in NCIS New Orleans recently, second season episode. But I know, given, of course, the connection with Star Trek, that being Scott Bakula, of course, Jonathan Archer.
Right.
And, of course, now lead in NCIS Los Angeles. It's Lily's birthday. Would you like to wish her happy birthday from your good self, Larry Nemechek? Quite simply because, Lily, thanks to Phil Leonis, has been gradually introduced to the whole Star Trek scenario. He's added to her street cred so many ways. So I feel it's only right to have Dr. Trek wish Lily Holloman a happy birthday. Larry, the floor is yours.
Well, happy birthday, Lily. I think if it's across town, then happy birthday. Have a great one.
Splendid. You see, it's bonding together. In the very near future, we'll be able to quite literally bond because, as Katie will attest to, we might have Larry, Lily and Phil all on the same line via Skype.
It can be done.
Yeah,
it can be done.
We've proven it can actually work. David, yes. We haven't had a chance to speak about your Doctor Who book as yet.
No, that's okay.
Because I thought, you know, obviously Doctor Who has gone into the Star Trek universe.
He has, once or twice, yes.
It's
once
been Matt Smith has encountered the he next has. Generation.
He's been there, yes.
So it does happen.
Colin Baker was in Star Trek Continues.
Colin Baker was indeed in Star Trek Continues. Yes. So, yeah. You know, the Time Lord has crossed paths.
He has indeed.
With, of course, the Star Trek
scenario. I know we haven't got much time, but I was just going to say after what... Katie said, you're not having my phasers. I'm not giving up my phasers.
I don't know, sometimes. It's a gun control thing, Larry. Don't worry about it. You know, please.
I'm keeping my phaser.
I can only imagine what preceded this. Yeah, right, so, yeah.
Well, it's
the beauty of it is, Larry, you'll be able to listen to the downloads as well. We'll send you the links. Larry, Katie's going to throw those last two questions to you. Go, Katie.
Larry, have you had an enjoyable and interesting telephonic link with us today?
As always, it's been indubitable. Yes, thank you.
Or will you be joining us again soon?
I would love to. Thank you.
Round of applause for Larry Nemechek.
Red down, red all for you. Walk that walk and talk that talk and whisper in my ear, tell me that you love me. I love that talk. When you talk like that, you knock me out right off of my feet. Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, talk.
And now, star of stage and screen, a lover of mystery, and an international citizen of the world, this is Lily Holloman.
Yay! Sam, would you like to wish Lily Holloman a happy birthday?
Happy birthday, Lily.
Happy birthday, Lily Holliman. It is your birthday today, Lizzie.
Thank you.
Here we are. And Steve? In fact, let's collectively do it in a kind of choral speaking thing, shall we? Let's do the official midweek driver. Happy birthday to Lily Holliman.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Lily Holliman. Happy birthday to you.
And many more.
Yeah. I think we all deserve a round of applause for that one.
Wow. It's always positive, you know. As Steve was worried after we did the gun law scenario in the first part of the programme where we were going. I said, worry not, my boy. We'll work our way through this, just as the good doctor will see us through all sorts of adventures, so will Star Trek as well. And indeed, so will NCIS New Orleans, because I finally did it last night, Lily. I finally watched Shadow Unit, featuring your good self as Emily Jansen. Honor is like sort of Klingon connections from that point of view. Well done. It's high time that your character returned. So, yeah, so I think the campaign should start.
Oh,
well
thank
done.
You.
Exactly. So they're getting very carried away with that whole
thing. I mean, maybe she should return. Maybe she'll be the suspect of a murder next season. You never know.
Well, there was a moment when I thought, could it possibly be? But I thought, no. I mean, you know, but then again, you see, Lily Holliman, would you imagine Lily Holliman could actually be a possible psychotic killer? No. Oh,
absolutely.
No.
Cold-hearted.
It's never the ones you expect.
It's never the ones you expect. There's blank darkness behind those eyes.
Blank darkness behind those eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I'm afraid to say yes.
Yeah.
Outrageous. Lily, we're just featuring Larry Namicek there. And this line, which seemed to refer to the classic Star Trek series, that Phil has gradually been doing his usual piece here, and quite rightly, converting, well, not converting you, because it's not like Star Trek fans have to be converted from Doctor Who fans or any other fandom. We'd love
them
all.
It's the book that does that.
Exactly. Lily, you gradually increased your street cred through Star Trek. Is this true?
This is true. Actually, when the very first reboot of Star Trek came out, how many years ago was that now? Maybe 6 years or so?
Indeed.
Phil sat me down and he had a very intense curriculum for me of very important classic Star Trek episodes and classic Star Trek films, motion pictures that I needed to see before I could enter the new world that they were creating. And I have to say, he won me over to the point where I had my own communicator, and when we were at one of the very first screenings of the new film at the Cinerama Dome, it's one of these theaters where the usher comes out and makes an announcement that you can't come in late, you can't talk, and you have to turn off your cell phone. And as soon as they announced that you needed to turn off your cell phone, I activated my communicator, and it made the classic communicator noise and just got roars from the hundreds of people in the crowd. So I felt I was initiated at that moment.
Indeed so, and rightly so too. Now, moving on, because I know this is very important, and again, it shows that magic. I know, Steve, you are saddened that Phil Leonis couldn't actually be with us to actually welcome you back to the Midweek Drive, because after all, yourself, Phil and myself, and indirectly Lily, we spent how many hours together back in 2012? It was a long event, wasn't
it? A lot of hours. It was at a time in the morning that I didn't know existed.
4 a.m.
Yes.
You said, when can I come along to the studio? I said, 4 a.m. in the morning. You were there.
Well, no, you actually, when I said, when should I be there, you emailed me back and just said 3.
Oh, yes. Well,
and then, but you didn't say 3 a.m., so for a long while, I wasn't expecting to be here until the afternoon.
It all adds to the whole sort of experience. That's the important thing.
Do you ever sleep, Alex? I have to ask. If you were here at 3 and 4 in the morning, do you ever get
What are regeneration chambers for? You know, honestly, you just work our way through this. Anyway, suffice to say, before we go into your Stephen Fry connection, which I haven't forgotten about, Steve, so yes, we'll go there. This is an important announcement.
You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM, guaranteed to keep you safe from giant lizards.
Now, you may well laugh. You may well sort of say, giant lizards. You may well sort of think, what's going on there? In the Leonis household. What did we actually say?
Yes. 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 We saw that. Yes. Yes.
You see, why
this is great radio. We're all sitting here going, yes, yes, yes. And they haven't. This poor listener has no clue what we're talking
about. It's an image that was found under the couch in the Hollyman Leonis living room. And as I said, I'm sure it must have been an Irwin Allen lizard from The Lost World, or possibly indeed even, you know, a Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea episode. Lily, what was your response? And is the lizard still thriving?
Well, just picture this, you know, a lazy Monday afternoon. The cat is fast asleep by the window. I walk over and I see this 6-inch lizard right under the cat's nose. She couldn't care less. And it bolts underneath the couch, and I scream. I mean, who's expecting to see a lizard in your house?
In California.
Oh, in your apartment. In your apartment.
In Los Angeles.
On the third floor, with no balcony, nothing. We have screens on the windows. I have no idea how this thing
Did it not come back with you from New Orleans, Lily? Was it not a case of, Lily, take me from New Orleans. I want to leave this swamp and go to L.A.
I mean, possibly a stowaway on a road trip from the New Mexican desert to the White Sands. You never know. But we later found out. So Phil and I are running around, and he's mocking me for screaming and doesn't really believe me. And as soon as he sees this thing, he yelps, huge, loud scream.
Phil Leonis yelping.
We're running around. But we do manage to get this little guy under a bowl and transport it out to the front garden down below. So I do think it is safe and sound and thriving in the wilderness again.
Casey.
But according to our neighbor, 4 days prior, she had seen the little guy in our hallway. And for some reason, she felt she needed to leave out some celery for this lizard.
As you do, you know. For what does it not say in the Constitution of the United States, the right to bear arms and leave out celery for lizards? Yes. Well, I'm rewriting it, obviously.
It would protect it from gases in the praxis spectrum.
Oh, of course, exactly.
So there's still a piece of celery in our hall, and she opened up the fire escape thinking it would go out, but apparently it came right under our front door and had a little love affair with our cat.
Well, interspecies mating is something which is obviously way out there. But if you've got Fuzz Aldrin and a lizard, extraordinary. Katie, thoughts?
Wait, I think this lizard's just chosen to come live with you. I mean, I think you should be flattered. It's kind of probably feeling a little bit rejected that it climbed all those stairs and went to all that effort to move in and you just rejected this
place. It's not even all those stairs, is it? It was the hitchhiking from New Orleans to get there. Like, I got a dream.
Exactly. I have to say, I do feel a little guilty, and it probably was eating whatever bugs we didn't want in the place. So, celery notwithstanding, I think it was having a pretty good time in the building.
If ever you start
to... I do feel bad about it, but...
If ever you start to shrink, Lily, you're going to be in a lot of trouble in your apartment, aren't you? With cats and lizards and bugs and...
The Incredible Shrinking Lily is a script I'm currently working on in terms of, you know, working through that. But always remember, Lily, as we've said before...
You're listening to The Midweek Drive on Siren FM, guaranteed to keep you safe from giant lizards.
Yes, I love the way she says that.
Well, you failed me this week, I will say. You did fail me this week.
No, we didn't. You're still here. You're with us. You know, we've battled those lizards on your behalf. Good Lord. What does she want? Steve, when Lily was last with us, she was entertained beyond words, it would seem. In fact, she said it was moving to listen to the spoken word poets, the mouthpiece poets people. So would you like to share with her about Stephen Fry, who I know Lydia always says is a quintessential English person?
Oh, it's the most exciting moment of my life for a while.
I thought surely meeting Sam Stone.
I'm directing this, the 800th anniversary of the death of King John at Newark Castle this year in October, and I've been asked by a guy from Newark to direct the play for him, and we went over to do that, and he's a senior figure in the British Institute of Psychology. And so we were down in London, walking through London together, as you do. And I get all giddy, schoolboy excited because I see Stephen Fry in front of us. I'm like, oh my God, there's Stephen Fry. Like a small child about to fall apart and just start shouting things like, I love you.
Not for good, no apparent reason.
Lost my cool completely. At which point, Peter, who I'm with, just wanders straight over to Stephen Fry and starts talking to him because apparently they've been friends for about 20-something years. So we stood there talking and he's explaining about the play and he's telling what's going on. And Stephen Fry said, oh, is there anything I can do to help? So being a bit bolshy, I just said, well, actually, I need a voiceover for the end of the play. And he said, oh, send me a script. So I was a bit like, yeah, okay, like it'll ever happen. of course I will. Went away. And then about 2 weeks later, I came home from work and I had the email from Stephen Fry with the three different takes of this voiceover, which was hugely exciting. And that was enough for me to be very excited. But I've since then had more messages from him.
He's stalking
me. He's now stalking me, which is fantastic. I know, I've since had more messages saying the reason he was doing the voiceover for us is because he was filming in America. But the filming in America is now looking like it might be postponed. And so he sent me his measurements for a costume so that he could come up and potentially do the part at the end of the play for us.
Wow. Yeah. Oh,
that's amazing.
And also he's a member of the Groucho Club and I want to be one too.
That's brilliant.
That's brilliant.
The Groucho Club. I went there one time. That's an amazing place.
Yes.
Have you been there?
Steve, the Groucho Club.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Have you been there?
Yes, I've been there, but only as
an
unwilling victim. I didn't know where I was going or what it was, and then I went in there and I was amazed. And now I want to be a member. But you have to be a member. You have to be pledged by an existing member.
That's right, yes.
And Stephen Fry is the closest link I have to a living person I know is actually a member, and so I'm going to jump on those tailcoats.
It's worth it. Meanwhile, Ellie,
remind me the story of the Groucho Club. What the history is.
I want now to appear really intelligent and give you some wonderful story about the
Erudite,
history of the Groucho Club.
But all I can tell
you is that it looked really cool, and I want to go there.
Isn't it called the Groucho Club?
Yeah, that's all I can really remember, too.
Because they wouldn't let Groucho Marx be a member.
So tell me about the part.
What is the part you're going to play? Sorry, I need to translate here, because it's obviously...
Oh, the part that I'm going to play?
Yes.
Well, I'm directing the play, but I am taking on a very, very small part of the King's right-hand man, just because we had somebody drop out.
This is very important. And when can we see this, actually?
It will be at the Newark Palace Theatre on the 19th of October, which is the anniversary date of the death of King John. And then we're performing at a small church in Horton.
So why are you not going over to Los Angeles so that Lily can actually drop by and see you in LA?
Well, I would like to say that's going to happen. The main reason that's not happening is because... that's expensive.
Oh, well, we have to sort of sort that whole thing through. If we can actually fund various correspondents...
fund that, then yes, I will take the play to LA, willingly.
You could work for it. Lily, I was quite astounded.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, that's amazing.
So thank you very much.
Having to relay and all sorts of things. Satellite delay, extraordinary. It's all down to headphones. Lily, Mickey Corcoran, currently actually actor operating as a greeter at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. I didn't think bow ties like that were actually allowed in the 21st century.
Should be mandatory.
Unless you were a 21st century person.
They're amazing.
But what does Mickey do apart from greet people at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club?
Well, actually, Mickey posted the picture. That is Adam Melema. He's one of our, one of my stalwart members who I brought on early on. I had met him briefly, but just knew he would love the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. And he joined immediately and has recruited so many people. He's helped me to really revive it. And he himself is a storyteller and producer of children's television.
Well, then, Lily, he should be on the Midweek Drive, quite clearly. It hasn't been mentioned...
Yes, I think he should.
It hasn't been mentioned that, Lily, your official role with the Los Angeles Breakfast Club is, of course...
Chairman of the Board and President.
I think that deserves another round of applause. Chairman of the Board and President of an association that goes back and way back in time to the 20th century, which for Americans is a very, very long way indeed... Sorry, I'm being slightly facetious there. But in terms of the sequence, brief mention of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, that's the movers and shakers of Hollywood who set this up to do good for the country and indeed for Los Angeles.
Yes, it does.
Exactly.
What you said, Alex.
Exactly.
Yes, they did. Yes.
Well, there's two different entities. The club itself meets every week, and we do crazy retro sing-alongs and calisthenics and the Pledge of Allegiance, and there's a live pianist and a full buffet breakfast and a new speaker every week, and we learn something new. And this week we learned about native flora and fauna of California and just the zillions and zillions of plants and trees and flowers.
And lizards, of course.
Yes. Well, they are responsible for the sound of the frog, aren't they? It's the only place in the world where a frog sounds like what you expect it to sound.
Exactly. And we're not being anti-French.
Really? I did not know that.
Sort of like, it's very important. In case you're wondering, and I know, Lily, you were fascinated to find out what the result was of the European Championship match between Romania and Switzerland, it was 1-1.
Yes.
Get that back. Yes, it was 1-1.
My life is complete.
Precisely. Just wanted to make sure that was sorted out. In a matter of moments, we have the return of Ryan. The return of Ryan. He who has worked very hard to try and get one set of headphones that would actually work, failed. But it's okay. We managed to lip read the listener across the whole base. So that's important. Of course, that also means it's not just the return of Ryan, but you continue to stay in the house, so to speak.
They've let me in and I'm not leaving.
Katie Dore will be with us. And the show is called The Sounds of Film and Screen. That's The Sounds of Film and Screen.
That sounds good.
This week brought to you by the letter C. Any highlights? I mean, I've deliberately avoided any Enya or any cross promotions from that point of view. Enya, obviously, E, so I don't know why I mentioned that in any way, shape, or form. But
there may be some
Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Creature from the Black Lagoon.
I couldn't. Critters. Spoilers.
Exactly. The whole fire on that one. Apart from saying that.
Cybermen.
Whilst you're doing that, Katie, big Doctor Who fan, very good, very apt on that episode of the line of things. Sam and David and myself will be recording for the listeners' edification and delight, and yours too, Lily Holliman, if you choose to download the podcast in betwixt all the rest of the bits and pieces, the joys of the Stone Tapes episode 14.
Episode
14 with writer George Mann, Fraser Hines, Jamie from the Patrick Troughton era of Doctor Who. Exactly. And a whole heap of other fantastic things there, including music from Lindsay Gold.
Yes.
It's amazing. You think? I can't wait. It's tomorrow. You'll have to wait. No, it's actually tomorrow. It's a week tomorrow. A week tomorrow. Steve, what will you be doing in the next few hours?
I am about to go over to the Drill Hall to go and watch all of Shakespeare's deaths combined into one play.
Very jealous. Such a sound ace.
All of Shakespeare's deaths combined into one play. It's not a massacre. It's long before gun control.
Well, I'm hoping it's a comedy. I'm hoping it's not just going to be just.
I'm looking forward to The Bear.
Good grief, the comedian's a bear. No, he's not. He's wearing a necktie. You stepped away from Mark Dooley in that particular line of things. Thanks to Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis, Arthur Weingarten, Annette Andre, William Coles, Professor Richard Hand, Larry Nemechek, and your good self, Lily Holliman. Go for it, Steve. Go for those last two questions.
Lily, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
It's been fascinating. Thank you.
And
thank you
would you be willing to do it again?
Break a leg on your show. Have a great show, and congratulations again.
Fantastic. And have a really, really nice birthday.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Just starting and working through that. I'm sure Phil is working very hard behind the scenes, which is why he couldn't join us today. We just had a few dulcet tones from that. Lily will return. That's the important thing. And life will continue ever onwards. Shameless plugs now for books. A reminder, Sam, of course, your two books that are available are
Jaded Jewel and Jinx Magic.
Jaded Jewel and Jinx Magic. And David J. Howe, your book, which we've sort of held back. We covered it this afternoon, but it is...
It's called The Target Book, and it's an amazing book all about the old Doctor Who novelisations and the covers and the making and behind the scenes.
And as we all know, Phil Leonis is the Doctor. So, you know, quite clearly sorted.
Or very soon will be.
Very soon will be, precisely. Katie, have you enjoyed the show?
It's been fabulous to be back. Thank you very much.
There we are. Back again very shortly.
Oh, indeed.
Marvellous. That's it then. In the studio, Steve Court, Sam Stone, David J. Howe and Katie Dore. Thank you. Thank you, dear listener, for simply being with us, doing your magic. The Saints and I'm stranded. Take us out. It's time for us to say bye-bye. A one, a two, a three.
Bye.
Bye.
And where's the lizard? Nice.
me calling on her phone. I've got no time to be alone. Summer coming at me all the time. You better think I lose my mind.